Blog Talk Radio.
Clown Hour. By the way, I also keep an awesome sports blog called The Clown Times. That's Clown with a K. And you can find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And you could also find us on Facebook. Just do a Google search for www.theclowntimes and you'll be able to find us. This is a special treat tonight. First of all, we're continuing the actual series, if you will, of the NFL superfan. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk Jacksonville Jaguars football tonight. It's odd because, and this is no disrespect to anybody, I'm just saying it's odd to find Jaguars fans outside of the city of Jacksonville. I don't know that many, except for this my next guest, who is a man of many, 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 many talents. He's a sports blogger, and he also, and Eddie, let me know if I miss anything, because I know you've accomplished a whole hell of a lot of stuff. He's also a contributor to Slam Magazine online. He also, I think, it works with Google. I could be wrong on that. And he also has his blog, the Sports Journal. Ed, am I missing anything else, my man?
I'm pretty sure there are plenty of things on the resume that people may or may not be interested in. I'll put it to you this way, man. Yeah, I do work for Google. That is a full-time job. That is what pays the bills. But the passion is definitely, you know, writing, being a quasi-professional journalist. Right now, I am the editor-in-chief of the Sports Fan Journal. I write consistently over at Slam Magazine, actually getting ready to work on a feature piece on Marcus Smart of Oklahoma State. That'll be going in the magazine, I think, in September. So looking forward to that. Do some work for SB Nation, do some work with NBC on The Griot as well, and do a little work for Complex, too. I mean, these are all, you know, places I dip my toes in the water, you know, and if they happen to send me a little money back, then I'm appreciative. But, you know, I'm appreciative and glad to be on the show, man. I'm really happy to be had. I'm humbled and honored, man. I appreciate it.
You know, I'm even more humbled to have you on the show because, like I said before, you're very accomplished. And first of all, like, before we get involved, first of all, just tell everyone how you got into sports blogging and how it parlayed into the track that you're on right now, because I find it very fascinating. I'm sure people will find it fascinating as well and pretty, you know, not to sound mushy or anything, but a little inspirational, if you know what I mean, in terms of getting into the sports world.
No, I could dig it, man. I don't know if other people, you know, will find it inspirational, but I definitely know that there are some people that will, man. And it's crazy because I would say I can actually remember the day, February 21st, 2008, is the day I started my own blog at the Sports Fan. .com. At that time it was on Blogspot, but you know, I'd always been wanting to just write, you know, and I'd always write for fun. I'd always write just to get my voice out there, and you know, I get my thoughts out on paper, and a lot of times I just write in a journal or I write in a diary or something like that, write in a little notebook.
Right.
And over time, you know, I was writing, and, you know, you started getting online, you know, the digital age started coming along a lot stronger. You know, I was writing on these little sites just to put stuff up, and you know, it just kind of occurred to me. I started seeing how things were transgressing, and I saw people started, you know, really getting into blogs. And I was like, man, you know, that's something I should do. I should, you know, and like not thinking about anything other than just having a personal place to have my own stuff. That was it.
Yes.
You know, that started in 2008. And, you know, what happens is, you know, you start writing and you start putting stuff out, and, you know, and people want to start reading it. And then, you know, Kanye Kanye said, if you want to blow up, man, go viral. You know, he said that in a rap song. And,
right.
You know, lo and behold, people started just checking us. And we started going to readership and, you know, we started pushing it a little more. And then, you know, one of our frat brothers, Kenny Masinda, man, I was humbled and honored to have him join me. He's one of my dear friends, and I always respected him as a writer. And he was honored to be on with me. And so, you know, that kind of started. And from there, things just kind of started happening, man. You know, we started, you know, I had this opportunity to start writing for Slam. And the funny thing is with Slam is, you know, I wanted to, I was hosting a contest on my blog to do the brackets for March Madness. We were doing a March Madness bracket challenge, and I wanted to give away a subscription to Slam Magazine. That's all I wanted. That's the only reason why I even reached out to him. You know, I've been reading Slam Magazine since I was Jay High, but I would say, you know, let me just, you know, peruse their website, and I emailed him, and I talked to the guy, and his name is Ryan Nelson. He's a good friend now. And I asked him, you know, could I get a subscription? I'd love to give away a subscription. I've been following you guys for a long time. And he wrote back and he said, you know, unfortunately, we don't give out subscriptions. But, you know, I'd also wanted to let you know I've been reading over your blog. And if you wanted to ever, you know, put something up on the site on Slam Online, we'd love to have you. And that was just like a mind blower. I was like, wait, hold on. You read my stuff?
Are you serious?
You know, and like, yeah, you know, and so that's kind of how that whole thing went. And, you know, then I started giving them stuff, and then eventually, you know, I was able to start getting stuff in the magazine, which is awesome. You know, I've been able to cover stuff with them, college basketball. I was able to do a pretty dope piece on Randy Moss's daughter, Sydney, who's now playing at the University of Florida. Done some stuff covering the Nike Hoop Summit, covering a piece on Marcus Smart coming up. You know, we've been able to do some things. And, you know, over the course of time, we started doing NedTheSportsFan.com, and then, you know, we started having more people want to write on the site. And I got uncomfortable because the site was named after me. And I said, well, let's change this up. So we changed it up, and we created the Sports Fan Journal on 11-11-11, November 11, 2011. And now we have 12 writers full-time. I don't want to say full-time, but 12 people who contribute on the site. And, you know, we've been pushing for about a year and a half now. We're under Fox Sports' publisher network with Yard Barker, and we've got some really well-acclaimed writers on the squad, and it's just it's fun, man. It's fun every day. You know, I look forward to doing it. And then, you know, along with that, we started just getting these other opportunities to pick up more writing opportunities, and people start to know your name, and, you know, social media started blowing up, and then all of a sudden, like, we had this following, and doors were opening up. So I say all that.
That's awesome,
I did all that rambling to say the following, that, you know, if you're really pure in your writing and people start vibing with it, you know, things can happen. And I think the best thing anybody could do is just, you know, you write for yourself, and if other people dig it, then you know you're doing something right. So that's basically what I think happened.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I'm gonna go back to what you said. You mentioned the Yard Barker. Now, do you say you contributed to Yard Barker, or did they contribute your site? What's the connection with the Yard Barker? I kind of missed that.
So yeah. So Yard Barker is owned by Fox Sports, and basically we're in a publisher deal with them. So they supply So they supply advertising on our site, and they put our articles in their circulation. So we get, you know, they circulate and they put it at different places. Sometimes stuff pops up on FoxSports.com. A lot of people get the Yard Barker newsletter. Some people go to YardBarker.com directly, and then, you know, through their Twitter feeds and stuff like that. So they have these various channels where people can get content that's under the Fox Sports banner. And so that's really what kind of helps us more than anything else. So so we get some additional viewers from that, and that's cool. And, you know, but that's just kind of part of it. I don't know, man. I mean, you know, Yard Barker is good. I'm not going to say anything to get me in trouble. But, you know, they give us a little chunk.
Right.
You know, they give us a little chunk. But, you know, we got, you know, it's funny because now you see other blogs and other sites and other people who have grown in this time where I've grown. And, like, now I have relationships with these people that are really doing big things. So, you know, half the time, man, we do some great articles, and I don't have to do much. I just kind of put it out there, and then I know other people will be advocates for us and, you know, let people know that, yo, you need to read this. You need to check this out.
Yeah.
And so that's the beautiful
right.
thing. You know, yeah. it feels good when you don't always have to do the heavy lifting.
Well, you know, I must say that, and I'm not saying this is to blow smoke up your ass because you're on the phone with me right now, but you have really been very inspirational to me, you know, and me in my starting my own blog as well. And, you know, I remember sitting with you and our other frat brother, Jeff, a Fido guy, you know, we're basically talking about blogging and you giving me pointers at BW3s in Cincinnati way back when. And I really appreciated that. And I've taken all that to heart. And seeing you inspires me. So I hope to do a fraction of good as you have and going to continue to do. So I want to say thanks before, you know, thanks for the love. Thanks for the encouragement. You know, I'm keep it on, man. So I want to just get that out of the way. First of all, I appreciate you for inspiring me to dip my toes in sports blogging. I mean, it's a hell of a lot of fun. It's about to get even more fun. So, again, man, thanks. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, it's no doubt. And, you know, the thing I probably told you more than anything is that, you know, I just want you to do more. I think that's kind of the and I get it, man, because, you know, I try to encourage, you know, you to do more so you can get your name out because I think what really becomes, I don't want to say difficult, but one of the things that as a writer, especially with the way the blogosphere works and social media works, is that, you know, in certain ways, you know, if you have to try to be semi-consistent. You don't have to be always consistent, but, you know, right. you have to stay on the top of people's minds. And I think some of that is over time, you know, I just kind of regimented myself to, like, you know, it's really pathetic. I'm glad, you know, I kind of have a young lady I talk to right now. But, you know, if I had a wife and kids, you know, I don't even know how I'd act because, like, pretty much my routine every morning is I wake up at about 6 a.m. and, like, I just check my phone. And, like, I just check my phone. I check emails. I check my social media stuff. You know, and then I go to the bathroom, you know, scratch my belly for, like, 2 minutes. And then, like, I get on the computer and, like, you know, like, I just – and then, I just sit in front of my computer for, like, 45 minutes and I'm editing stuff and writing stuff. And then I go on with the rest of my day. Like, most people get up in the morning. They might make breakfast, go to the gym, you know, do whatever. But, like, you know, for me, like, I just immediately put my head in a computer and then I go to work to put my head in a computer all day. You know, but, like, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. I'm like, I don't think that's for everybody. You know, this, you know, it's not for everybody either. And, you know, but I think
No, no, I was going to agree with you. I was going to say it does take time. And, you know, that's part of the sacrifice of all because, you know, I have a wife and a three and a half year old, actually. And
beautiful three and a half.
And it's pretty hard, right. It's pretty hard to find time, but I find time, and it's a lot of work, but it's well worth the sacrifice if, you know, for those of us married brothers or whoever out there who want to just have their own thing as well. It's just the work. You just got to make it worth the journey. You know what I'm saying? You know, the journey worth the work. So, you know, I totally agree with you about the time-consuming thing.
I will say this, though. We're not all as fortunate to be Beachbody consultants like you, Mr. Burke. So, you know, I'm just humbled. You know, I'm trying to keep up with you, bro. You know, I mean, I got this beer belly over here. I mean, you know, I look good for a bigger dude, man. But I'm just saying, we ain't all got to look good, my brother. We're trying to keep up.
I'm flattered. I'm doing the best I can, my man. I'm doing the best I can. Yeah, I mean, Father Time is knocking my door, so I'm doing the best I can, bro. Well, you know, I hate to put a damper on this podcast, but I got to talk to you about your Jaguars. So, first of all, I know you're from Oklahoma, but what made you become a Jaguars fan way back when?
Sure, this is probably the number one question I get more often than anything else about my Jacksonville Jaguars fandom. But I think it's actually pretty simple. I think it's probably, you know, a combination of three things. Number one, I'm from Oklahoma. And everybody in Oklahoma is pretty much, I would say, 65% of people in the state of Oklahoma are Dallas Cowboys fans. Another 25, 30% are fans, those fans are maybe Packers fans, Niners fans, and Steelers fans. Those are probably the next couple of teams that people are fans of. And after that next 4%, 5% are really just a smorgasbord of people, teams that they're fans of. Well, let me tell you something.
Okay.
I hate the Dallas Cowboys. That is the team I hate more than anybody else. I hate the Cowboys. Another team I don't like is the San Francisco 49ers, even though I live here in the Bay Area. I actually one of the first players I ever grew up liking was Deion Sanders, and he played for the Atlanta Falcons. And that meant, you know, I didn't like the 49ers at all. And, so that's kind of number one. Okay, well, so a lot of these teams that people like that I'm growing up with, I don't like those teams, number one. I do remember being an Atlanta Falcons fan. Like, when I was growing up really, really young, I really liked the Atlanta Falcons, and this is going to be funny. But I also liked the San Diego Chargers because I thought at the time I was a big Junior Seau fan. And I thought I looked like Junior Seau. I thought I was, like, his, like, illegitimate son. And so I dressed up as Junior Seau as, like, a nine-year-old. I remember dressing up as Junior Seau for Halloween. Like, that did happen. And there might be photographic evidence. But
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah. But, you know, about 10 or 11, you know, 11 years old, you know, I came and, you know, a couple of things happened. Number one, that's when expansion happened. Carolina and Jacksonville emerged on the scene. And I'll be honest, this is the number two reason. Number two reason why I became a Jacksonville Jaguars fan, I love those damn colors. That black, that gold, and that teal was big fan of those uniforms. I remember getting. See, this is when they first do the promotional jerseys. Now, when they do promotional jerseys for new uniforms, they just put a number one on it, and it'll say Texans or Bobcats, whatever the new team is. Well, I had the promotional 1995 Jacksonville Jaguars jersey, and I was like, man, I probably wore that thing about 30, 40 times, man. I was wearing that thing out, and I just loved it. And then the number three reason I became a fan is we actually had a family friend who played for the Jaguars on their inaugural draft. His name is Chris Houston.
Really?
He went to the University of Tennessee. He went to the University of Tennessee. He played defensive back. He lasted a couple of years in the league. But we knew him. My mama did his mama's hair. And I remember he came back home, and he put a Jacksonville Jaguars hat on my head at 12 years old. And that sealed it. Ever since then, I've always been loyal to the Jacksonville Jaguars from the days when we initially had Steve Berline at quarterback, along with James Stewart, until we evolved to the Mark Brunell era, one of the greatest left-handed quarterbacks of all time. The emergence of the Jimmy Smith era, probably the most underrated wide receiver, maybe, you know, of at least the last 20 to 25 years, even though he likes to do lines of cocaine now, which is not cool. We have one of the greatest left tackles of all time, Tony Boselli. You know, I could go down the line with the historical narrative of the Jaguars. Fred Taylor, who should be a Hall of Famer. We got, we've had Byron Leftwich and all them guys. We've had guys, the 1999 season was magical. We were undefeated. We went undefeated in the 1999 season. Except for we lost to the Tennessee Titans three times. And we lost to the Tennessee Titans three times. We lost to Tennessee 20 to 9 or 20-10 in the AFC Championship. Yeah. And that's when Tennessee went to the 1 yard line and lost to the Rams. And I was convinced we could beat the Rams. I knew we could beat the Rams. I knew we could.
Yeah.
And but we could not be. We just could never beat Tennessee. And so we've had our time as Jaguars. We're struggling right now. And look, you can do your damnedest to try to turn this into a downtrodden, beleaguered conversation about my Jaguars, man. But you know what? I am upbeat. I'm not necessarily excited about the season, but it's my team, man, and I love them. So I welcome these questions.
And that's good.
I'm happy to get them.
Good.
And we gonna make a shake.
You know, and that's good. That's what you call a true fan. You know, I'm not trying to be Debbie down on anything on any team. That's just a true fan. Is ride or die with your boys, no matter what. I mean, me for example, I'm a Steelers fan, so I remember those awful '80s. in the sense that I started watching football in 1981-ish when I was on 7, 8 years old, and basically those were the lean years, the leanest years. Because I remember And I hate the Cleveland Browns with passion, but I remember those are that's the decade of the Cleveland Browns, which was very painful. You know, I mean,
yep.
those awful, god awful orange and brown uniforms. It's like, I mean, they look like what I felt about them, like shit. You know what I'm saying? They play like it now, but that's another story. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that I stuck with them throughout the 80s, and I was rewarded in the 90s. You know what I'm saying? When Bill Cowher came to town. And, you know, now with Mike Tomlin, a.k.a. Omar Epps, running the show in Pittsburgh now, you know, it's all about, you know, and, right, and that's, you know, that's just the essence of being a true fan. You're always going to be rewarded no matter what. Speaking of the Jaguars, I mean, I remember there was a time in the mid to late 90s when I looked at the Jaguars the same way that I look at the Ravens. You know, when the Jaguars came to the league, as you know, they built themselves to be like the Steelers. You know, Tom Coughlin was running the show, and why they fired him still, I don't understand to this day. But at any rate, he drafted like Pittsburgh. He built the foundation, played the strong offensive lines at the time, Pittsburgh did have offensive line, and good defensive play. But the difference was you had a more dynamic offense than we had in Pittsburgh, which – you know, once you got Mark Brunell going, that's when it took off for you guys. You know, you went from, you know, your inaugural season, I think you guys won 6 games, maybe 4, I forgot. But the second year, you guys made the playoffs as a wild card. Right. You guys made the playoffs as a wild card the next 2 years. Then the third year, you won the division, and it was well for a couple more years before, unfortunately, you know, things started to happen. You know, injuries took over and, you know, Mark Brunell, you know, especially, you know, with his injuries. But, I mean, I looked at you guys, I'm trying to say is I looked at you guys as the next big thing in the division because you guys were the next big thing in the division. I mean, you guys, you know, you took down the perceived kingpins and the Steelers by doing it your own way. And seeing, I mean, and remember Pittsburgh never having any type of luck in Jacksonville. I mean, y'all made us wear those black jerseys in the hot ass sun in Jacksonville. And, you know, y'all just, Jimmy Smith just torching us, Mark Brunell scrambling, getting yards, Fred Taylor doing his thing. Your defense was outstanding when Dom Capers was at the helm on defense. Yep. I mean, you guys were it. And I think Tennessee ruined what would have been a good run for you guys, I thought, because I thought you guys were the best team that season. It's just that for some reason you couldn't beat Tennessee.
Well, you know what's interesting? And I was as soon as I finished talking, I was thinking about it. You brought it up, so I'm glad you did. Yeah, man, there was because people don't remember, you know, this is before the divisions went to 4 divisions, and we were all in the AFC Central. And we were all in the AFC Central, and, like, it was always, like, you know, the Jaguars and the Steelers was, like, a legit rivalry for a little bit.
Right.
And for about a 3, 4, 5, I mean, you could argue that it went up all the way damn near to, you know, 07, you know, with the 4th-and-2 play. And I say that not to rub it in. I'm just saying that was pretty much
No. I understand.
Rivalry there.
You guys deserve it.
And I thought it was interesting because, you know, and you're right, like Tom Coughlin was exactly what we needed because, you know, people got to remember, man, we were a team of misfits and outcasts and outliers, man. And Jimmy and Tom Coughlin had an eye for discipline, and he whipped us into shape. He really did. And, you know, one of the sneakiest things I think Tom Coughlin ever did is the day we hijacked Carnell Lake from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I take Carnell Lake coming to the Jaguars kind of like how Kendrick Perkins is when he came to the Oklahoma City Thunder because there was something where we were good. Like, you know, it's 97 and 98, we went 11-5. We were a good team. But that 99 season in particular, and we had Donovan Darius back there and we had Carnell Lake, like you were not getting over the top on us and we were scraping down on the run. Carnell Lake instilled something in us that was apparent because they were louder, and I say louder as you would hear like them talking even on television. You would hear the talking, and they were a little more animated. They were more controlled. The penalties went down, and it was just like, yo, this defense is legit, and it was amazing to watch. And you know, that defense was solid. People don't remember the Tony Brackens years, the Kevin Hardy years. You know, we had some legit guys on that defense. And people forget Keenan McCardell. People forget when, you know, Fred Taylor finally took the reins in 98. Right. But people also forget that in 99, Fred Taylor got hurt. He was always known to be hurt. But in 99, he got hurt. And I don't think he was 100% for that game in the playoffs when we played the Titans. So I say all that to say, you know, that particular run from 96 to 99, and, you know, especially when we beat Denver 63-7, we mollywopped them. That put us on the map. And people knew at that point that the Jaguars was legit. And but you know what? You know what happened to Tom Coughlin, man? He was at that time, he wore down teams. And that disciplinarian role wasn't going to fly forever. And, you know, the team started to evolve and then I started getting some injuries and like he was burning players out. And so they had to get him out of there. And to be honest, like what he did in New York is amazing. And I think that's really a testament to him just becoming an older coach. I think having the right type of players there, I think Michael Strahan did wonders for Tom Coughlin. I think Wellington Mara and the ownership of the Giants did wonders for Tom Coughlin. And I think having a quarterback, not that Mark Brunell could listen, I think Mark Brunell would be loyal to Tom Coughlin forever. But he had a quarterback in Eli Manning that would listen to him and believe in him and would let him develop. And when you have those types of things there, you cultivate a chemistry, you cultivate a belief in a system. And, you know, over the course of time, like, you know, if you ever notice with the Giants, they're almost cyclical now. Like, they didn't make the playoffs last year. I bet they're really good this year. I don't know if they're going to win the Super Bowl again, but like every couple of years, they kind of just ramp up. They retool a little bit, and then they refocus. I think Coughlin's a Hall of Fame coach. I think he probably won't get the respect he deserves for what he did in Jacksonville because he made Jacksonville a relevant organization, very much so. And I think it's something that they struggled to do now after Jack Del Rio and the shenanigans that was Mike Mularkey. And I really like what we have as an organization now. But, you know, like, it's just it's hard. As a Steelers fans, you know, y'all get a lot of crap, and I will give you some crap if you allow me to. But you guys have been really blessed because there hasn't been that much of a culture shift in Pittsburgh. And it's the same way in Green Bay. It's the same way in teams that are just New England where Tomlin – was molded by Cowher, and he knew how to keep the boat going in the right direction. He knew how to get the oars moving a certain way, how to ride the wind, you know, watch for high tide, low tide. He's been through that, and he commands respect. And I think a lot of times, man, when there's organizational issues, people, they try so hard to do something totally different that then the waters become rocky and they can't sustain it. And, why I have the utmost respect for Pittsburgh, even though I hate y'all a lot. But, you know, that's only hateful respect, you know. But, you know, Ben Ara, I love Ben Ara. We don't call him Ben Roethlisberger where I'm from. We call him Ben Ara. And, Ben Ara, you know. And, you know, the Pittsburgh, usually they always find a way to, you know they're going to get about 25, 30 sacks when they're outside linebackers. You know, there's going to be a safety or two that's taking people heads off. You know, that run game's going to be legit. Like, you know, it's just certain things about Pittsburgh you already understand what's going to happen. And, like, there's nothing wrong with having consistency and reliability associated with your organization.
Thank you. I really appreciate the love. But just hang in there, man. I mean, you guys, it's always – things go in cycles. I mean, you guys would have toasted the NFL for a period of time. And with the right coaching, you know, the ownership appears to be very stable with your boy Khalid. That's why I call him Khalid, you know, so it's just like he's one of the homies. You know, I think he's doing good things for you guys, and I think he's going to keep the bus moving. And I actually like your new head coach, Gus Bradley, from – I mean, maybe the Seahawks defense, scary hellified, if that's the term.
Right.
And so I think he'll do good things in Jacksonville. I think Khalid is going to show some patience And, you know,
I don't know how I feel about this. That's funny.
So what now?
I said, I don't know how I feel about this nickname you give him, my owner. I mean, it's cute. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's funny. Let me interject a little bit. Let me just say this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that, you know, after Jack Del Rio was the head coach, and look, Jack Del Rio was not given, you know, a full cupboard, so to speak. I mean, the first 3 years he was there, you know, he had to make a decision on getting Mark Brunell out of there and giving Byron Leftwich the job at the time.
I remember that.
Give him credit for making Byron Leftwich a relevant quarterback. You know, he got the most he could out of Byron Leftwich. We had a 12-4 season with under Leftwich. You know, we still had Fred Taylor going. Jimmy Smith was still there. Like, we were still pretty decent. And then, you know, then he had to make that decision. Do I give the job to Garrard or not? And he gave the job to Garrard, and Garrard, you know, for 2 years, he kept the boat afloat. And, you know, that fourth – look, that fourth and two game was phenomenal. That's probably the last time I've been happy watching my Jaguars play. And let me tell you something, that's a long time. That's 6 years ago. But that's a long time, I have to say. Yeah, that's been a long time. That's the last time we were, like, super legit – good. And I love that was one of the best games ever. And like, you know, the Steelers were just coming off another Super Bowl, and you know, it was just like, man, like, we beat these guys. It was great. But you know, like, Jack Del Rio can only do so much. And Dave Gerard isn't quarterback worth a damn, not for real. You know, and like, they had too much to replace on defense. And, you know, offensively, they just never really had. The one thing that has been interesting is like the lack of skill player talent we've actually had. We've actually always been able to keep good running backs. I mean, you think about it, we've only really had three great running backs ever. We've had Natron Means, you know, we've had Fred Taylor, and we had Maurice Jones-Drew. Like, I mean, we've had three, you know, I mean, you could throw in I'm probably disrespecting James Stewart. We've had James Stewart. We've had four legit running backs in 17 seasons. That's pretty good. That's pretty consistent.
Yeah.
But we haven't had a wide receiver worth a damn since Jimmy Smith, Keenan McCardell.
Right.
You know, it just hasn't been there. And like, even at the tight end position, like, we just really haven't had a lot. I mean, we got Mercedes Lewis, and he's all right, but, you know, it's Mercedes Lewis. Like, nobody cares. So,
right.
You know, like, I think I'm excited to see, A, Gus Bradley potentially bring in a defense that isn't – that can make people that have certain skills – he can amplify them and get the most out of them, number one, because I think that's what you saw more than anything else in Seattle. Pete Carroll's already a really good defensive coach, but, you know, Gus Bradley was doing with those schemes was awesome. And that can get you excited about what could potentially happen in a couple of years with Jacksonville's defense. And I like the general manager that we brought in, David Chandler, I believe is his name. We brought him in. He was the assistant to Thomas Dimitroff at the Atlanta Falcons. And they have done well in acquiring top talent. I don't necessarily know if they've done a great job in building depth on the Falcons, but when they have their picks, they get quality guys. And I think that's really all you can ask for, because there have been too many times that Jacksonville has done one of the following things. They have traded all these picks to go get someone, Derek Harvey, to move up 15 picks in the draft to go get a defensive end that, like, isn't even on our team now. Or they'll go get a player that, you know, last year we drafted a punter in the third round. That tells you everything you need to know about our draft class last year. We drafted a punter in the third round. We've drafted players in the second round from Division II and Division III schools regularly. We did that with Derek Cox. Derek Cox is a great – he was a really good cornerback. He played his rookie contract with us. He got 4 years out of Jacksonville, and he was really good, very underrated. And he signed a four-year, 20-some million-dollar deal with the Chargers, and he's going to probably be their number one, number two cornerback. We drafted that guy in the second round. Like, you start talking about value, right? That's where a lot of these teams – like, the Green Bay Packers are great at this, where they will go get value players in the fourth round, fifth round.
Yes.
Jordy Nelson was a fifth-round pick. Randall Cobb was a seventh round pick. You know what I mean? You think even about Aaron Rodgers, they came back and got him late first round, and he's the best quarterback in the NFL right now. They don't spend money. They don't waste picks on running backs. You know, they keep a state, and their philosophy is consistent. And they, you know, if you ever notice too, Green Bay doesn't go out and get a lot of free agents. They build internally.
Right.
And they you're seeing you're seeing that. You saw that with Atlanta too, where, you know, almost everybody on Atlanta now, you know, what Atlanta's doing, I like, because they're building internally, they're building through draft picks. Matt Ryan is a homegrown kid. You know, they had Michael Turner, who was homegrown. Well, they got him young. They traded for him early. But Julio's theirs. Roddy White's theirs. You know, a lot of people on that old line are theirs. Witherspoon, Grimes. You know, like that whole defense has been homegrown. And then what they're doing is they're sprinkling over the top with a little gravy. They're getting some putting some pepper on there. They got Gonzalez now. They got Steven Jackson. Yeah. They went and got John Abraham a few years ago. We're like, look, man, we are a solid team. Now, can we get one or two or three guys to try to put us over the top? And I like what they're doing. I don't know if it's going to work, but I commend them for their efforts. And I think if Jacksonville can do a similar type of build, then two, three, 4 years down the line, you know, look, I know you haven't asked me this yet, but I'm going to answer this on this question for the question I'm about to ask.
Okay.
Here's the issue, and I'm pretty sure you were going to ask me this because this is the question everybody wants to know about.
Uh-huh.
Eddie Masonette, do you believe in Sunshine Gabbard?
Yes.
You know, you might not even know that we call him Sunshine Gabbard. Of course it was.
Sunshine Gabbard, huh?
Sunshine. Yeah, we call him Sunshine.
Damn.
Sunshine Gabbard. We don't call him Blaine. He has not earned the dignity to be called by his own name. Not yet. he might never be able to be called Blaine Gabbard. I will always refer to him as Sunshine. And I don't think Sunshine Gabbard is capable of being a quarterback worth a damn in this league anyway. I thought that when he was coming out of Missouri. You know me. I'm from Oklahoma. I watched Big 12 football, and when Blaine Gabbard was in at Missouri, I just thought he was a guy. I mean, I thought he could operate the spread offense pretty well. The thing that, you know, and that shows you how our regime was effed up because – mm-hmm. Nobody thought Blaine Gabbert should be picked with the 12th pick in the draft, but here we go, trading up in the draft to go get to go get Blaine Gabbert. We got a backup quarterback in Chad Hennessy. Yeah, it didn't work out at all. We got a backup quarterback in Chad Hennessy. Y'all might call him Chad Henney. No, I call him Chad Hennessy. Chad Hennessy. Because I can't stomach the fact that, one, Chad Henney is the best quarterback on our team. He is. He's the best quarterback on our team.
Is.
You know what else you need to know about Chad Henne? He's still kind of sort of terrible. And because of that, I often drink Hennessy when watching my Jaguars play.
Oh,
so here
my
we go.
God.
We got Sunshine Gabbard. We got Chad Hennessy at quarterback. I am just hopeful and praying that we can bring Teddy Bridgewater to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Bring him back to the state of Florida. He's a Miami kid. Bring him to North Florida. You know, the interesting thing is like Teddy Bridgewater, I have been championing, you know, this bring Teddy Bridgewater to Jacksonville. And people think that I really want Jacksonville to tank. And I have come to the conclusion that, man, look, we don't have to tank. We're pretty freaking terrible as it is. Scott Burks, let me ask you a question. Name two starters on the Jacksonville Jaguars defense right now. Can you do it?
No.
No, you can't. You cannot. 97% of NFL fans probably cannot name two starters on the defense right now. You know, but that's where we're at. My point is we're not going to be that good. So we don't even have to try to tank. We're about to pull out a 3-13 season. That's what's about to happen. My only thing is, I would love to be able to secure a great pick. I would, and people are going to say that we should take Jadeveon Clowney, and I would have no problem taking Jadeveon Clowney. If he is who we end up taking, I will be totally happy.
Okay.
But I also know what it takes to become a great team, and you can look at the Seattle Seahawks, the Washington Redskins, the Indianapolis Colts, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Carolina Panthers as five teams within the last 3 years that got a quarterback worth a damn. I'll even throw the Cincinnati Bengals in there. Whereas there's six teams in the last 2 to 3 years that got a rookie quarterback worth a damn, and the outlook of the franchise changed dramatically.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there's no worry on who QB1 is.
Yeah.
Dog, I have one quarterback that I refuse to call. I have two quarterbacks I basically refuse to call by their name. One emits a vision from the backup quarterback of Remember the Titans. The other one basically makes me want to drink bound liquor all night. This is my quarterback situation. We have a running back.
God.
We have a running back who is in the last year of his contract, and Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah.
We have our number one receiver just got hit with a 4-game suspension for abusing substances. Our number two wide receiver is named Cecil Shorts III. That's all you need to know. We have a tight end who has a similar name as the female rapper for No Limit in Mercedes. We have an offensive line that resembles Swiss cheese. We have a defensive line who our number one pick 2 years ago, Tyson Alualu, is now being asked to learn a new position. They're already trying to make him a defensive end because he's too small to play defensive tackle. This is the type of team we have been drafting. We're moving a guy who we valued as a number one pick is supposed to be a starter from day one, and he's supposed to be able to immediately contribute. We have a number one pick from 2 years ago who we're already asking to change positions. So this is what we're dealing with. You know, we have Paul Posluszny. He's probably the best defensive player on our team right now. We have replaced our entire secondary again. Third time in 5 years, we pretty much revamped the entire secondary. And we still have a punter that we drafted in the third round. Oh, we have Josh Scobie. We have Josh Scobie, the kicker who insulted one of my good friends, Dragonfly Jones, on Twitter. And, like, for 12 seconds, I just really didn't like the best special teams player in my mind because he's our kicker. He's, like, one of our few Pro Bowlers because everybody gets a Pro Bowl selection, it feels like. And, like, Josh Scobie is our guaranteed Pro Bowler, and he's insulting one of my good friends, Dragonfly Jones, on Twitter. And I'm just like, dude, I'll chop your legs off right now. That's just how I was feeling at the time. I don't feel
that's
like that now, but that's how I felt at the time.
Yeah.
This is my team, man. This is my team.
God bless you, dude. So I guess the next question is, we both know, and probably a lot of sports fans, NFL fans, and quote-unquote experts know, that it's not going to be a good year for you guys, more than likely, unless the coach does something crazy in the mad scientist manner, if you will. But I mean, just looking at your schedule right now for this year, you got KC at home. I mean, it may be improved with the boy from Philly, what's his name, Andy Reid, coaching the squad, and actually having Alex Smith on the center, which I thought was a huge coup for the Chiefs, but that's another story. The good news is you get Oakland week two. Oakland stinks.
You're coming out.
That's right. You guys going out to Oakland. That's right. So you get to see them, more likely.
Let me tell you a funny story quickly. Because
Because
Jacksonville came out here last year. That was my second Raiders game. The first time I went to a Raiders game, I went week one against the San Diego Chargers Monday Night Football. And that was the night I saw a man wearing a Phillip Rivers jersey. He was probably about 6'1", 255.
Okay.
And his dimensions will be important in a second. He was wearing a Phillip Rivers jersey at the Raiders game. And I'd say a man probably about 5'5", 160 at the most, with an aggressive mustache, and he was of Latino persuasion, basically told him, take that goddamn suck-ass Chargers jersey off and turn it inside out before we have a goddamn problem. And I saw this man shamed in front of all his friends, and he had to take his jersey inside out because he didn't want no problem. I was like, the Raiders fans are officially real, and I love everything about this place. This is great. Now, being the dummy that I am, 3 weeks later, I went to the Jacksonville Jaguars game when they played here in Oakland, and I wore my Jacksonville Jaguars paraphernalia. And I will tell you that the Oakland Raiders fans were pleasant to me. They were fun. They were wholesome. And they treated me awesomely. And by awesomely, I mean I got yelled at all night, all day. I got chastised. I got cussed out. I think I had some popcorn thrown at me at some point. I do remember, and we were sitting in the 300 section. My homeboy I went with is a Raiders fan, so he was, you know, we were like together. And there were these four African American gentlemen that sat behind me. I am, it is interesting because I am of African American and Hispanic persuasion. So they were cordial to me. They were friendly. He's like, man, what you doing up here, man? You from Florida? And I was like, nah, man, I'm not from Florida. I'm just a fan. You know, I didn't really want to go into the whole story, but. You know, they was like, oh, man, okay, well, that's cool, man. I'm glad you came out here to represent your team, you know, and it was cool, whatever. And then they proceeded to tell me that there was a time when another Florida team, the Miami Dolphins, came to visit the Oakland Raiders, and a Dolphins fan was cheering a little too aggressively because his team was whooping up on the Raiders, and then they said that they saw his head bouncing up and down off the concrete because the score was getting out of hand. And I was like, okay. I ain't even sipping though because y'all are winning right now, and I just want to see a good game of football. And we were cordial after that. It was cool. We didn't have any problems. And wouldn't you know it that the Jacksonville Jaguars would lose to the Raiders 20-17. After being up 17-0, we gave up the ghost and lost the game, which is probably a good thing because I was able to escape with my life. So there it is. And I do plan September – the second week of the season, I am going to go back, and I'm going to wear my Jaguars paraphernalia, and I will do it again.
Cool. That's what's up. There's something about Oakland Raider fan that, and not too many people, and this is coming from a person who was spanked as a kid, and pledged, of course, A5A, you know, a real pledging style. Not too many things scared. Raider fan scares the hell out of me. Okay, Raider fan, I'm hearing stories about how back in the, I think the 80s, a Steelers fan almost got beat to death in the bathroom. Probably the same Dolphin fan that got his head bounced up and down the concrete, got his ass whooped at a urinal. And Raider fan scares me, period. I just want to tell those fans, you don't want to look them in the eye. You can either look up in the air, down or step aside or take the long way around them. I don't fuck with like Raider fan, period. Right. I don't fuck with it. And Philly fan too, but I don't, but not Raider fan. No way, no how.
Well, this is interesting. Let me say this. I think Raiders, I didn't have any issue with Raiders fans, and I generally believe if you're respectful, they will be respectful to you. If you go in there flapping your gums, popping your mouth, you know, trying to cash checks your ass can't cash, then you might run into a real problem. Okay?
Right.
And my advice would be you need to roll with some help. Don't go in there by yourself. Like I said, you know, I went with two Raiders fans, so it was cool. I don't know. My partner, he's not going to the game this time. But if I go again, I'm probably going to go with some partners as Raiders fans so that they can already be ridiculing me and having a good time. So it won't be like they got to gang up on me. Like, I got help with me. You know what I'm saying? So that would probably be my suggestion on, you know, if someone was trying to go repping the other team. But here's the thing. I don't think you have as much of an issue. Well, let me rephrase. Most NFL fans do not have an issue going to the Raiders game. Now, if you are a member of the AFC West, because all those rivalries are very original. Chiefs, they hate the Broncos, and they hate the Chargers. Now, there's another team that the Raiders hate, and it is the one and only Pittsburgh Steelers. So, Scott Burks, if you ever take your talents to the Bay Area and you want to go to a game where the Raiders play the Steelers, I don't have any problem in you going. I'm just going to suggest you wear a Kevlar vest and also have your emergency contact ready just in case something might pop off.
Hey, I'm a lot of things, a dumbass, and not one of them. So
there it is.
I was enjoying for the nice confines of DirecTV or the Sunday Ticker or whatever sports, not even damn sports ball out there. Fuck that. Like I said, I'm scared of Raider fans, so I'm just going to probably roll in there just a simple hoodie, just keep my hat down low, keep my chairs to myself, and sip my my Long Island iced tea or on a palm and just call it a day.
There it is.
Call it a day. Hey, man, let's end this on a positive note, because I know, you know, you guys are going through down times, but, you know, let's just keep it positive. But what do you think of their jerseys? Y'all have, like, Nike. Now that Nike's the lead apparel maker of the NFL, they're coming out with these trick-ass jerseys and everything. They did with the Seahawks last year, and they're doing with you guys this year. What you think? I know you've seen them by now. So what you think?
No, absolutely. I've seen them. I've seen them up close. I remember Nike sent me some promo material, and I got to see them up close. I think they look good. You know, there's a phenomenon that I have noticed plenty of times where you see teams get new uniforms,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden they become better for some reason. I'll give you a couple of examples. The 1995 Houston Rockets, the 1997 Denver Broncos. Is probably a vivid one I can remember more than anything else, because that's when Nike basically established the Nike swoosh in the pants, and people don't remember that. You can even talk about the Seattle Seahawks this year. Seattle got these new uniforms, and they turned into world beaters. It was amazing. New uniforms, I think new uniforms in pro football is not any different than new uniforms when you are in Pee Wee football, you are in midget league basketball, playing coach pitch. You see what happened to the Mighty Ducks when they got new uniforms. They became the best hockey team in District 5 in Minnesota. You see what happened to Harbaugh when the little kids got the baseball jerseys, even though the little boy had to die at the end. That was real tragic. But I'm saying, new jerseys have a tendency to revitalize a team. Now, personally, I would love to see Jacksonville become revitalized and play a new brand of football and everything. I just still kind of want them to lose a majority of their games, because I still kind of want number one, number two pick in the draft. Like, we ain't got to lose 35-7. How about we lose, 17-14? Like, I would hate those games in one hand, but at the other hand, I knew we were making progress. Okay, we're moving the ball, offensive line's moving nice, getting a nice little pass rush, folks can't score on us too much. You know, and then we just paving the way for Teddy Bridgewater to be the next quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I'd be totally fine with that. And I love the jerseys. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what people aren't talking about is the helmet, because they basically have now turned the whole helmet into a two-tone black and gold helmet. Look, if you're a member of Alpha Alpha, you probably love this uniform. I mean, it has feel. So there's a whole lot of black and gold in it, so it's kind of dope. And I am interested to see what that's going to look like on the field. I think they play Friday. They might be playing tonight. I have to look. I'll tell you this too. People want to talk a lot of crap about Jaguars and they don't sell out and things like that. Let me tell you something. That stadium was never meant for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That stadium is the seventh biggest stadium in the NFL. It was meant for a Super Bowl.
Right.
That's why it's that big.
And to get a ball.
You don't ever hear that Jacksonville's last in attendance, because we're not. Matter of fact, there's a team down the highway in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that regularly have lower attendance than we do, and they have a smaller stadium than us.
Right.
We don't have issues with – there was an issue at a time when we did have blackout issues, but once we put the tarps up and we regulated our attendance numbers, we haven't had an issue with blackout since. And frankly, I think that issue has been beaten into the ground. It's been way overblown. The Jaguars have a good
fan base. It's a tired argument. Right, it's a tired argument.
Yeah, I mean, but look, it's as much Jacksonville's fault more than anything else. You know why? Because once Jacksonville starts winning some games, then they're not gonna have they're not gonna have this to bring up. Right now, people don't know anything else about the team other than the fact that they got them tarps on the stadium and they got this owner with a very cool and egregious looking mustache and they got a wide receiver that may or may not be doing lines of cocaine and and maybe I'll draft Maurice Jones-Drew in the second round in my fantasy draft. That's it.
Yeah. I tell you what, man. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. You good, man. You good. I apologize.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, there was a flyer, and I'm gonna wrap it up with this. There was a flyer that's a Jaguar fan page. I forget the website. Yeah, actually, the exact URL per se, but. And I think I posted that image of it on my Facebook blog page. But at any rate, it dispelled the misnomer, the misconception about Jaguars attendance. And I'm glad you brought that because I was going to think about going there with you. But, you know, it's a lot of misconceptions. I mean, like you said, to your point, they're not the worst drawing team. People automatically assume that because of the tarps. But they're not they're by far not the worst drawing team in the NFL. People don't realize that, and you know, and the fan support there is pretty damn great, you know. And they think people outside think it's Tampa at best, but it's pretty good. It's a football city, and you know, I mean, granted with the Gators and the Bulldogs fans down there, but you know, Florida and Georgia respectively, but still, it's a football town, and they're happy about their Jaguars. They love their Jaguars. And that's all there is to be. Hey, man, thank you very much, man, for joining. I know you're a very busy brother. I appreciate you taking time out. I hope to maybe have you on some subsequent podcast, man. And maybe we'll just argue a little bit over college football playoff on your website in the future. But thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, no, it's no problem. Anytime and every time, you know, definitely willing to support. And, it was good. I just put it on Twitter. I was like, I didn't know I was capable of talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars for damn near an hour. Like, this is incredible and unbelievable. And you have stretched me to new heights. So I appreciate you, Scott Burks, for bringing the best out of me. So this is great. So,
all right.
No, man.
Hey, I'm honored, Eddie. I'm honored, Eddie.
There it is.
Appreciate it, man. Hey, peace out, brother. Take care.
All right, brother.
Yes, sir. All right, 06, man.
Yep, 06.
Okay, so that was my man, Eddie Mason at the third, talking Jaguars football. Please follow him on Twitter at @TheSportsFan and check out the Sports Fan Journal online and check out his work on Slam Magazine. That was great. That was a whole lot of fun. Who knew that talking Jacksonville Generals and that would be fun? But it was. Thanks a lot for joining us and thanks for tuning in. This is Scott Burks. And this is the Clan O. Until next time, 06. I'm out. Nice.